The MadTech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of ExchangeWire's MadTech Podcast Special. I'm editorial lead here at ExchangeWire, Mariam. Now, before I introduce our guest for today's episode, I just sort of want to talk about today's topic, which I think will be quite important for those across the sector, and that is brand authenticity. Where do we find it? Where is it heading? And, you know, given tech advancements such as AI, what does the future look like for brands and advertisers wanting to hold on to it, you know, this precious commodity? So joining me to help answer these questions, I'm genuinely very, very excited, as I mentioned to him right before we jumped on our recording, to introduce our guest for today's episode. Please allow me to introduce Dom Dwight, who is Strategy and Innovation Director at Betty & Taylor's of Harrogate, who are, of course, makers of Yorkshire Tea. Dom, so excited to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Mariam. It's lovely to be on, but it's particularly lovely to understand that I'm entering a friendly environment where I'm talking to a Yorkshire Tea, not just a drinker, but like an advocate. So that's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah. So excited to have you on. So we've got much on the slate today, much to talk about. So I kind of just want to dive into our first question for you, Dom. So regarding authenticity, what sort of challenges surrounding authenticity do brands and advertisers face as a result of the sort of surplus of content that we're seeing these days?
I think, well, I guess maybe the first thing to say, because I wonder if people don't know Yorkshire Tea very well, it might seem odd to have somebody from Yorkshire Tea talking about these topics, but obviously Yorkshire Tea is a kind of modern brand and we've done pretty well in the last 10 years. We've grown a lot. And I think one of the ways that we've grown is that we have actually been pretty fortunate, but we've also used good judgment in terms of how to use new media and navigate things like social media, despite the fact that tea is quite an old-fashioned category and Yorkshire Tea can seem to be quite a traditional brand. So that's one thing. I suppose the issue with content is, I guess the current ecosystem we've got doesn't really prioritize value for everyone. It's a game where a lot of brands have to create a surplus of content to stand any chance of doing well in terms of search visibility, you know, and they maybe need to kind of run a really wide gamut of topics in order to increase their chances that when somebody's online that they're going to discover that brand or it will come up in conversation. So there's a real risk there that like everybody loses sight of whether there's any value in what we're doing, because it just becomes a game to try and be ahead of the pack and get noticed by a consumer. And then, you know, the brands lose out because they get lost in this kind of world of producing content that they don't really believe in. And the consumer loses out because they have to bite their way through a, you know, sea of rubbish content. So yeah, the issue is just you've got such a quantity thing going on at the minute that how on earth do you find a way to do the quality? You could flip that though, because I realize I sound quite negative. That is therefore an amazing opportunity for any brand that's got their wits about them. Yeah. And it ought to be relatively easy to find a way to zag when everything else is zigging and be really distinctive, which I think is in some cases, I feel like that's what Yorkshire Tea has done, is we've sort of focused on having a very distinctive tone of voice and particularly online personality that links to our TV work. And that's helped Yorkshire Tea stand out when sometimes everything just feels very wallpapery.
Right. I guess this is just out of curiosity. In terms of demographics that you guys target, is it that you found like Gen Z sort of, you know, more into Yorkshire Tea now? Or is it that you have distinct audience segments that you know are, you know, the loyal followers? Or is it that you're managing to appeal to everyone?
Ooh, it'd be brilliant if it turns out we are appealing to everyone. Some days when we get something right, it feels like that. But mostly we do what every other brand does, where we've got our audience segmented and we don't always think in terms of age demography, because it feels like that can be very, very limiting. But it often plays out that way, because tea is basically, like I said, it's an old-fashioned, well-established category. Older people do most of the tea drinking. in the UK. You know, so your average kind of person, so the tea category is really old. Like there's a lot of the categories made up of people over 65 drinking tea. There's a huge part of the category that's people 50 to 65 drinking tea. As soon as you get under 50, you start to notice a big dip in the amount of tea that's being drunk.
Yeah.
So your average 30 to 40 year old is probably drinking half the amount of tea than an older person, because they are also drinking other things. They're drinking coffee in the morning, or they're drinking more tap water, that kind of stuff. Then when you get into Gen Z, that's when we get into real trouble in tea, because Gen Z typically kind of see tea as a comforting drink that you might drink in the colder months, which means they're drinking it much less through the whole year, you know. Cover your ears, but a lot of young people maybe only drink one cup of tea every couple of weeks. That's horrifying to me.
How dare they? I feel like I don't fit into that category at all. Well, so when you say this, is pretty interesting.
I appreciate that. We appreciate that. But so there's a real, we would be a bit mad to focus all our efforts on that younger audience, even though that's an obvious problem that we need to address. Our real opportunity in the last 10 years has been to speak to that sort of young family, early middle age group, where we can either get them more interested in tea because they were slightly interested in tea already, or we just get them interested in Yorkshire tea rather than one of the other brands, which that's what we've mainly been doing for the last 10 years, is how do you win over existing tea drinkers in their 30s and 40s and get them more willing to pay a premium, because Yorkshire tea is a more expensive product.
Right. So interesting. So staying on that sort of thread of like establishing trust with consumers, from your point of view, Dom, in a media ecosystem like that, that's just increasingly filled with misinformation, it seems, how can brands demonstrate authenticity and establish that sort of trustful bond with consumers?
I think it's on the one hand, it sounds easy because you just need to be really clear with yourself what your brand is and what it isn't, what your brand stands for and the things your brand would never do. It's just that the world can get quite confusing. And when you're trying to please everybody and you don't want to alienate anyone, that you can trick yourself into thinking that you've got it right when actually you've got it perfectly wrong and you don't stand for anything. And, you know, so there's something about being really clear about what you stand for. And then there's another bit, which is trying not to be boring. I attended a fascinating lecture the other day. It was a piece of work by Adam Morgan, the author of Eating the Big Fish, and Peter Field of Field and Burnett. And they were talking about some work they've done looking at dullness and just the power of not being dull. And it's interesting to think that there's a lot in common with this idea of authenticity. But obviously sometimes in the sort of quest to be less boring and more interesting, you might lose authenticity. And I would suggest that that's risky too, because the other bit, which is, I feel like the bit that people don't really champion because it can sometimes not sound very sexy, is consistency. So I think if you can find a way to be clear on what you stand for, to execute it with creativity so it's interesting and exciting, but most importantly, to be consistent about how you do that, then I guess what you're doing is you're building trust and you get known for something, and that is cumulative over years. So it's not like just you burst into the sky and everyone notices you. It's the idea that, you know, because the average consumer is not thinking about Yorkshire tea very often.
Right.
If you did prod them and say, what do you think about Yorkshire tea? I think compared to 10 years ago, there are more people now that would have at least something positive to say because they can think of something when they recall Yorkshire tea. And that's...
Right.
That's, you know, 10 years of consistently trying to be clear about what we stand for, but also be entertaining.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting you say that. So it's like consistency in the sense of like building a sort of consumer base and showing to them and displaying to them time and time again, like this is who we are and what we do is so good because of these reasons. So it's interesting that you mentioned that. So in what ways do you believe Yorkshire Tea perhaps maintains a certain level of authenticity?
I mean, I suppose the consistency thing, to link back to my previous answer. So I look at our, for the last 8 years, our TV advertising has been working from the same platform of this idea of where everything's done proper, which is not that unusual. There are other brands. Specsavers is probably one of my favorite examples of a brand that a marketing team that has decided they don't need to rip it up and start again because actually they're building from something brilliant.
They've got it really right, actually. They're one of my favorites too. I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. Like you actually look forward to their ads in a way.
Yeah. And I can totally get that for other businesses, the temptation is that you think that it's time to bring some novelty and do something new because people are tired of what you have been saying up to now. But that's very rarely the case because consumers aren't actually thinking about you most of the time.
Yeah.
So with Yorkshire Tea, I think we've spent 8 years with this, playing with this idea of where everything's done proper. And, you know, we might occasionally think, oh, have we run out of steam? Is it done? But I think for the consumer, it's only really just starting to land.
Right.
So there's a consistency thing. But I think maybe another example of authenticity where it's not quite so fun and it's challenging. We definitely have found as we've become bigger and therefore higher profile that there are certain online conversations or media debates that can be really difficult to navigate. So we've had a few, you know. It's no secret that, like, so tea, because it's a sort of subtropical agricultural commodity, is grown in lots of developing countries. And all of those developing countries have economic issues, political issues. So trying to navigate that, trying to be an ethical business and to trade fairly is tricky because you cannot fix these problems in these countries. Right. And sometimes topics come up. So a few years ago, there was a big investigation into living standards in Assam, where we source lots of our tea. Now, thankfully, the things that this BBC report unearthed were on estates that we don't buy tea from. Mm. But we were not entirely separate from that debate because Assam is a really challenging region.
Yeah.
And what we did, the reason I'm making this point, is that we tried to find a way to respond to consumers' concerns like as honestly as we could and to speak kind of human to human to those people rather than coming across like we'd just done a really clever PR job of trying to cover our asses as much as possible. And it felt uncomfortable doing it because it felt like we were sticking our neck out when we could have tried to play it safer. But the public responded really well to our honesty. It started something, actually. I think it started a line of conversation with interested people online about these issues where we've been able to build on it and tell people more about the work that we do at Origin. But, you know, it's uncomfortable sometimes because you think, oh, if we are this honest, are we going to tie ourselves in knots? Are we going to get ourselves into trouble?
Yeah, and consumers are smart. Like, you know, Yorkshire Tea is very much tied to tea leaves, which is, like you said, in a pretty, I wouldn't say volatile region, but it has volatile tendencies. So it's consumers are going to be looking at that and thinking you want to seem authentic, but you have to then be authentic in the way you're delivering news as to how you source things and whatnot. So I think, yeah, really interesting. A key takeaway there is consumers are smart and we shouldn't think otherwise.
Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, the average consumer is smart, but the average consumer is also really distracted and has got a million things going on. So it's entirely possible to lie to a consumer, to trick them with, basically bullshit. And most of the time you might get away with it. Like, I don't want to kind of paint this idealized world picture where the only way to succeed is by being good, because right. There's loads of evidence around us of people getting away with bad stuff. So I suppose what I'd be trying to say is there is another path, though, where if you try and be decent and honest and open and human with your consumers, over time you become known for that and you stand out because of it and it pays back, which is then a really win-win because, you know, the consumer feels like they're not being tricked, but also the people inside the business working for the brand feel purposeful and believe in what they're doing because they know that they're doing something decent and good.
Mm, definitely. So obviously this is sort of like the year or the decade really of AI. So it would be remiss not to talk about it. But in your opinion, Dom, how is AI sort of impacting authenticity in the advertising landscape? Maybe this is applicable somehow to Yorkshire Tea, but, you know, you let me know.
It's so right now, I don't know if it's not obviously applicable to Yorkshire Tea, but I think it will be because it's going to affect everything. So, I just yesterday, actually, I was learning about Sora, Google's new, the video generating thing.
Not Google's new, sorry, that's Gemini. ChatGPT's,
Yeah, and I know that there'll be a million different versions pretty soon, but Sora feels like it's the one that's got people most excited because I think it's generated like clips that are 4 minutes long and they're quite effective and all that stuff. And you just think, wow, if it can do it now, imagine what it can do in a few years. I've forgotten the name of the director of Slow Horses on Apple TV, but he was recently quoted as talking about it will be making movies in 3 to 5 years' time. So if I was in the movie industry, I'd be thinking, oh my God, what is this going to do to our industry?
What's happening to the job, probably.
And yes, that's definitely true. You know, there will be some jobs, there will be some industries that will be like totally changed, if not kind of decimated, replaced. But there'll be other industries that might take their place that use AI to do more. Because I think sometimes we sort of think AI just is going to sort of negate things and replace stuff. But when you look at like the track record of technology, typically what happens is we use that technology for more productivity. Yeah. So we do more, or we go faster, or we go smarter, or we go better, rather than that we just try and do what we were doing, but with less people involved. So I think I'm mostly positive about AI because I think, you know, for advertising, what it might do is it might take care of quite a lot of the grunt work. So I know from talking to our creative agency, Lucky Generals, they've mentioned before that, you know, it's definitely not at a place where something like ChatGPT could write you a workable ad script. But what it might be able to do is it might be able to generate that first draft of ideas that you always throw away because they're always a bit generic and rubbish. But it just accelerates that first part of the creative process.
So, right, gives you like sort of a baseline to work off of.
Yeah. And the same with, you know, kind of when you're doing mood boards and you need some quick graphics pulled together, it won't replace the final graphics, but it might accelerate that early part. And I'm still dubious that AI would be able to produce the end result and for it to be something that an audience member is, they're not going to notice that it's got a kind of slightly odd feel to it that it wasn't. Yeah. You know, at some point, I feel like a human does need to tinker, even if it's just to sort of do the seasoning at the very end.
So it doesn't look too like Uncanny Valley.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the other thing about AI, I guess, is like we have already been on this road for ages in terms of automation and programmatic and you know, I'm sure somebody smarter, more articulate than me said this once, but the truth is like, we're already living in a world where the robots are in control. It's just the robots right now are pretty stupid compared to what they'll be in 10, 20, 30 years' time.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture, though. I suppose one of the risks is that the surplus of content is nothing to what we're going to see because the ability to create pretty mediocre content will be accelerated massively, so the internet will be awash with even more slightly rubbish stuff getting in our way. And there's also the risk that you know, not everybody's got good intentions. So some people will use AI to, you know, manipulate consumers in a way that's not great for us, even more powerfully. So there are risks, definitely, but there are also opportunities for good organizations with strong values to kind of use it to accelerate what they do, but to also use their kind of humanity and their imagination so they actually stand out.
So, Dom, final question for you here, and sort of gazing into the future, what do you expect in terms of challenges surrounding authenticity for brands and advertisers?
I think it probably ties into a lot of what we've just talked about. So there's definitely challenges around if it's already quite difficult to stand out in a sort of sea of noise, that is going to get more difficult because there'll be even more noise. Even though, you know, and I know like our media agency, Good Stuff, we've been talking about this recently, about the idea that there'll be all sorts of tools that will help you do that even better. And I think there's also this challenge for brands to maybe be quite choosy about which media partners they partner with, you know, which are the ones that are kind of reliable and consistent and trustworthy. And that's maybe the key thing. I just think trust is the big thing for the future, because you've either got, as a brand, which media partners do you trust? Which platforms do you trust? And that is not always straightforward. You know, the most obvious one for me these days is Twitter or X, which, as an advertiser, I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole right now. For a variety of reasons. Some of them are kind of judgmental moral things, but I would also ruthlessly just say it's incredibly volatile and unpredictable. So I'm not going to
It's become very untrustworthy.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I think ever since the takeover of a certain person.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you know, I've got views on that, but I'm trying to make it a little bit more neutral. But even if you're neutral, there is no way to say that Twitter is anything other than a car crash. So
it's difficult to be neutral in this situation. Yeah,
exactly. So any sensible brand owner is going to think, I will just avoid that and go for platforms that are a bit more stable. So that's one thing. And then I guess the other thing is, from a consumer point of view or just a human point of view, I feel like it's going to be ever more challenging to know what and who you can trust.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a dad. I've got two teenage kids, and I think about the world they're growing up in. And I actually find myself thinking, kind of media savviness and critical thinking, like, they're great skills, but they're starting to feel to me like they're almost like essential skills that we kind of need to be taught much earlier in life because of our exposure to this kind of much more fragmented media world that is riddled with unreliable information. So yeah, it's a mind-bendingly big subject, really, when you start getting into it.
It is. And you touched on something that was that really stood out to me earlier, and it's like, you can look at things through either a positive lens or a negative. You know, by one token, it's content glut. There's so much going on. There's so many brands trying to vie for eyes. But by the other side, it's kind of like, you can put a positive spin on that, in the sense of, if you do stand out and you do manage to seem trustworthy, authentic, or, you know, different than the cookie cutter norm, it's massive. The potential impact of that will be massive, especially in today's content, you know, filled world. I thought that was really interesting, that point that you brought up.
It really feels like it's a key thing. It's a key opportunity and a nice kind of silver lining to a lot of the crazy stuff that's going on. Yorkshire Tea is not our only kind of big brand. We also produce coffee under the brand Taylors and Harrogate. It's a smaller brand. It's a smaller part of the market. But what we've learned there as well is that, because coffee is an interesting one, because unlike tea, it's a lot more dynamic. There are a lot more brands spending money and competing and innovating and all those things. So trying to work out how to position Taylors in that is tricky. But what we've done recently is we've landed on the fact that, as a family business, that's actually quite unique in that space. So we are leveraging and communicating familyness. But in the way that we did it, what we learned was that actually, for our ad to be too slick, too stylized, would be the wrong thing to do, because that's what every other coffee ad is. Every other coffee ad is very glitzy. You know, the obvious example would be Mr. Clooney and a certain capsule company. But so what we went for was something that felt a little more down to earth, slightly rough around the edges. And hopefully that's kind of reflective of our down to earthness, but it also means that then the aesthetic of the advertising feels quite different to other coffee advertising. It's quite a new campaign, so the results that we've got are quite sort of early days, but it's quite encouraging. And I feel like that's another example where, you know, trying to be clear on who you are and then authentically bringing that to life in a consistent way is a sensible thing to do, because it actually leads to distinctiveness. And distinctiveness feels like probably one of the biggest things that any brand should be trying to cherish and work towards.
Right. Love that, distinctiveness. And that's sort of a punctuation point for today's podcast episode, as unfortunately we've run out of time. But Dom, I just want to extend a massive, massive thank you for what's been a brilliant discussion.
Thanks, Mariam. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot. And thanks to everyone listening. That has been it for this week's Mad Tech Podcast special episode.